Global demand for energy is predicted to increase dramatically in the coming decades. At a time when countries are striving to transform their mix of energy sources, with an increasing emphasis on achieving both economic and environmental sustainability. Both the United States and China top the charts in terms of national energy production and consumption. Not only do these two nations play critical roles in the global energy policy discussion, but they also have a significant responsibility in leading the world's transition towards a new energy future. Historically, energy and geopolitics have consistently been intertwined, which only adds another layer of complexity. Will the tense relationship between Washington and Beijing jeopardize the prospects for a successful global transition towards new energy futures? Or conversely, could the issues surrounding energy serve as a common ground to advance U.S.-China relations? My name is Robin Goodman, and welcome to the Bush-China Foundation podcast. Joining me today to examine the issue of energy and, in particular, energy policy in the context of U.S.-China relations is noted academic Dr. Fred Beach. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Beach.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Robin.
Dr. Beach is a researcher and lecturer at the University of Texas at Austin. Dr. Beach also teaches energy technology policy and international energy policy at the Cockrell School of Engineering, the LBJ School of Public Affairs, and the McCombs School of Business. A 25-year veteran in the U.S. Navy, he has served as a consultant on defense-related topics for the U.S. Chief of Naval Operations Strategic Studies Group and the Defense Science Board, among other agencies and committees. Dr. Beach, let's begin by talking about the global energy landscape today. There's a tremendous push by many countries, including the U.S. and China, to swiftly shift their energy mix towards a carbon-neutral future. At the same time, demand for energy to fuel economic growth around the globe, and in particular the U.S. and China, is growing at a tremendous rate. Can we envision a carbon-neutral future alongside sustainable economic growth, or will countries be forced to compromise one goal to achieve another?
Well, I certainly think we can achieve both. It's just a matter of time scale. I'm old enough now, I doubt I will live to see a carbon-neutral future for the United States or the world. It's going to take time. Energy transitions have historically taken multiple decades, if not centuries. So moving from a world predominantly fueled by oil, natural gas, and coal to a world that's carbon neutral with a very different energy mix is going to take decades. And I don't think that's unreasonable or something we should worry about, but something we need to keep a constant pressure on. Energy transitions have taken place over millennia in many instances, and this is just the current one we're going through. So yes, I think both are achievable.
The Energy Information Administration projects nearly a 50% increase in world energy usage by 2050, led mostly by growth in Asia. At the same time, the U.S. and China have also pledged to go carbon neutral by 2050. Do you think these type of timescales are reasonable?
I really don't think so. It'll take different timescales for different countries. It will be easier for the United States, as an example, to achieve those types of goals than it will for China, simply because we're a post-industrial nation. Our GDP continues to grow and our energy use is flat. China, on the other hand, is a currently still industrializing nation, much like the United States was in the 1950s and 1960s. So as they're trying to achieve less carbon impact, they're also rapidly growing their energy use, where compared to the United States, like I said, where we're flat. So it will be much easier, or at least it will be achieved much sooner by the United States than China. And I don't think that should be surprising or unexpected.
So shifting to U.S. energy policy, President Biden, as he came into office, has advocated for an all-of-government approach to climate change, to energy, and he signed several executive actions, including freezing new oil and gas leases on public lands, and the executive action that looks to double offshore wind production by 2030, among others. How do you feel about this effort by the current administration in terms of its effectiveness in achieving its goals? And how does China potentially fit into meeting those goals that the U.S. administration has currently put forth?
Well, I think it's important that we realize we often fool ourselves to think that the United States has an energy policy. The United States government talks about energy policy, but the energy policy of the United States is we're a capitalistic country. There is no energy policy except what the market demands and lowest price wins. And since we as consumers are pretty much driven by lowest price, we buy lowest price energy. So the energy policy of the United States really is tacitly let the market prevail. And that is good news because that is why we are seeing an energy transition today. The market is saying that wind and solar, other renewables, and lower carbon energy sources are preferable, not only from an environmental aspect, but from a price aspect as well. So no, the United States does not have an energy policy, irrespective of any president or any administration. The actions you mentioned that our current president has put in place are really non-consequential. Limiting new leases on federal lands is not a big deal. It means current leases on federal lands continue. And besides, the vast majority of our energy production, oil, gas, and coal, does not come from federal lands. So I see no real impact by that. And even stating goals of being climate neutral by such and such a date, the government doesn't control that. The consumer controls that in the United States, and it will happen when the consumer dictates it. China has a very different government structure and differently structured economy, and China therefore can drive goals such as that much more decisively or effectively than we can in the United States, which is not necessarily a good thing. China continues to be a huge fossil fuel consumer, consuming more coal than the rest of the world combined, and continues to build coal power plants, not because they're evil or sinister, because that's how every developing nation has industrialized on the back of coal, United States included. So they are going through that era in time in a perfectly natural way. Yes, they are trying to develop more lower carbon sources, but it's hard to replace their current carbon-heavy economy with a light carbon economy when they're simultaneously growing their energy use. So it's going to be a long time coming for China to achieve anything close to a carbon neutral economy, certainly far longer than it will in the United States.
I want to expound upon one point you made, particularly around the idea that there is no one U.S. energy policy reflected by our separation of powers, reflected by the way that we govern and the way that corporations are run, as opposed to China. There is a stated government policy that is then affected through the socialist model of state-owned enterprises, of truly all of society approach. Right now, the big hot issue between the U.S. and China that was put in place by the previous administration was the aspect of trade and of tariffs, and the energy industry was affected similarly. China currently has a 5% tariff on crude oil, or it may have gone down to 2.5% now, and a 25% tariff on liquefied natural gas. U.S. similarly has very high tariffs on different inputs, steel and other raw materials that need to be used in the production of energy here in the U.S. I wonder, are the U.S. and China better off trying to isolate and use their model to develop, or are they better off trying to work together or find a way to leverage the various assets and the competitive advantages they have?
I think first we need to look at a couple of realities. One is, and this is my opinion, I think economists and politicians agree, tariffs tend to be self-defeating. They're a very poor way to enact policy or try to influence nations one way or the other. The first principles we need to look at are, one, the United States is the world's largest oil producer. The United States is the world's largest natural gas producer. The United States has the world's largest reserves of coal, period. China is the world's largest coal consumer. China is the world's largest petroleum consumer. And China is soon to be the world's largest natural gas consumer. And unfortunately for them, they have very small reserves and domestic supply of all of those. If there's anything like a match made in heaven from a trade relationship, especially when the United States already has a huge trade deficit with China, I mean, it's almost natural and fall down easy to solve that trade issue when we have an abundance of coal, oil, and natural gas, and China does not and needs it. One almost has to imagine that we are somehow on one side or the other trying to prevent this from happening, which in a free-flowing market would be a natural occurrence, i.e. for us as a country to be a major supplier of the coal, oil, and natural gas that China so desperately needs. So it is kind of a dichotomy, an oddity, that we're in a situation where we haven't been able to balance our trade deficit with China by basically selling them the energy they need to produce the huge range of goods we've purchased from them. It seems there's just quite a disconnect here. And I can only say it all comes down to politics. I think part of the problem is Americans are of two minds. Certainly, we would like to balance our trade deficit with China. And certainly, an easy or logical way to do that would be, as I said, sell them the energy sources they need to manufacture the goods we buy from them. But at the same time, the United States is trying to reduce our use of coal, natural gas, and oil. And as we're successfully transitioning away from them, it seems odd to some Americans that we would then still keep producing those primary fossil fuels and export them to another country to be burned. And it's not hard to see the logical thought there, that what good are we doing reducing our consumption of those fuels if our production of them contains constant and we're just exporting them to another country to consume? So, I mean, this is getting kind of at the crux of why we, when I say we, the royal we of the United States, do not have an energy policy. We are a capitalistic commercial economy, and where the government historically does not meddle too extensively in free trade. But, we have certain interest groups in the United States, coal being a good example. We have drastically reduced our coal consumption in the United States. We can still be a huge coal producer and export that coal to countries that still need it and consume it. But there is significant pushback against trying to make that happen, such as moving Powder River Basin coal from Wyoming to the West Coast for shipment to China. That is a very logical trade route and a very logical exchange of goods. But for environmental reasons, that has not happened because of very vocal environmental groups in the United States have blocked the ability of the industry to do so. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It comes down to how you feel about the environment and whatnot. But from a basic trade relationship and currency exchange and debt balance ratio, that would be an easy win for the United States, is to become a major coal exporter to China.
Yeah, it seems like in many ways they're the answer to the question that we've been asking: how do we create a more reciprocal, more fair trade environment, one that benefits the U.S., creates jobs here in the U.S., is staring us right in the face. China has things that we need. They're willing to purchase them. But right now, U.S. policy is preventing that. Job-killing tariffs continue. And this is one aspect I wanted to really get into with you. We all know that the Trump administration implemented an anti-trade policy. The Biden administration and the Biden campaign, during the campaign, pledged to remove those tariffs, remove the job-killing tariffs, and open the trade routes back up. However, we have not seen the Biden administration yet act to remove those tariffs in any substantive way. I wonder what you make of the Biden administration's inaction and the potential for the Biden administration to carry forward these policies that the Trump administration put into place.
I guess my easy answer would be it's early days. The administration has only been in office 3 months. It will take time to move forward in some of these promises and these agreements. But again, from a political side, tariffs play well with constituencies. If we are unhappy with China, and there are several vocal groups in the United States that are unhappy with China for several reasons, those are seen as an easy way of expressing that dissatisfaction through those tariffs. And that may be one reason the Biden administration is reluctant to quickly remove those tariffs without some form of quid pro quo from China. It's a hard nut to break, and kind of a chicken egg approach of who blinks first and starts to lift those. I think it will happen in time, though. There has to be some warming or some thawing of the U.S.-China relationship. There are still many sticking points, whether it's the Uyghur population in the western part of the country and how the Chinese government has been suppressing that demography, that demographic, or just basic trade issues regarding security and patent rights. So I think it will happen. I just think it's early days in the Biden administration, so I'm not reading anything into it yet that those tariffs have not yet been lifted.
I would be interested in shifting a little bit and talking about the new energy technologies that the U.S. and China are developing, such as wind and solar, but also hydrogen and other technologies that may help the countries and the economies grow, but also meet either carbon neutral goals. And where do you see in this aspect potential for the U.S. and China to collaborate? And where do you see barriers to that or places where the U.S. and China may be strategic rivals?
Just my opinion, my perception. I feel that wind and solar technologies in general are going to continue to be a huge growth industry. China clearly has garnered the largest market share of solar PV manufacturing globally. They made a very conscientious effort to do so. And thankfully, they did. They are solely responsible for driving the cost of solar PV down rapidly over the last decade to where it is today, which is what has enabled the solar revolution, so to speak, for the world. So good on them. Thank you. I see them trying to do a similar thing with energy storage in lithium ion and other chemistry battery technologies and electric vehicles. So again, I'm glad to see them investing in building the factories and the capabilities to bring the cost of these technologies down. Now, the technologies themselves obviously are a matter of research and development that happened in the U.S., European countries, as well as China. So I think there's always natural competition between countries from a technology perspective as to where these technologies are actually manufactured. It's natural to see them manufactured in China. We are a post-industrial nation in the United States. That is a reality. To think that we're going to start becoming a huge car manufacturer again in the United States is foolish. The United States does not manufacture cars. We assemble them. They're manufactured in China, in Mexico, in a dozen other countries. And the best we do is bring the parts into the country and assemble them. So that horse has left the barn a long time ago. I think the important part is to focus on, you know, in the United States, maintaining a strong research and development and technological base so that we can be the birthplace of the technologies and the companies that will take these things forward. Where they're actually manufactured in the final point, I think is somewhat irrelevant whether they're manufactured in the U.S. or overseas. In fact, again, I'll use the example of solar PV. The fact that the vast majority of solar PV is manufactured in China does not seem to have hurt the United States in our ability to take advantage of that technology and that product. Wind energy, similarly. The United States is not the leader in wind energy. It's actually the countries in Northern Europe that lead that, whether it's Denmark or Norway. So I am not real concerned personally on where these things are actually manufactured. It's still going to take energy to do it, and China's going to need energy to do that manufacturing. And if there's any one thing I'm an advocate of, it's selling them that energy so they can in a means of helping to balance our trade deficit.
Really, the simple argument is we have it, they want it, so let's do it. I mean, there really doesn't seem to be much more than that. It is, as you said, a match made in heaven.
We look at China, they need this energy, they're buying this energy, they're importing this energy, and by us not providing a significant portion of it to them, we're forcing them into the arms of the Russians for oil and gas. We're forcing them into the arms of Middle Eastern countries for their oil. We're forcing them into other avenues to obtain this energy to spite ourselves almost. It is just first order foolish in many ways, the way we're approaching this. I don't understand it. I certainly don't agree with it, but I don't know how we get around that until we thaw these relationships to some extent, because as we saw 3 years ago, China would certainly love to import liquefied natural gas from the United States. China would certainly be eager to import Texas Intermediate and Texas Sweet crude if we allow. They do not want to become overly dependent on any single source, any single country, for the fuels they need to import, but I think they would certainly welcome a larger share of that energy from the United States.
This is a great area to talk about the geopolitical situation. Again, China and Iran have signed an agreement on energy cooperation. You mentioned the pipeline from Russia. I would love to get your opinion and your thoughts on China's ambition in terms of energy. What are its goals? What is it looking for? It is a large energy producer, but as you said, it is also the largest and also growing in tremendous rate energy consumer. So from China's perspective, what are their strategic interests in terms of their growing their energy imports and their domestic production?
It's hard to be real specific, but from my observation of the last 10, 15 years, they're doing as much as they can to keep their energy import sources diverse. They will import oil from any nation they can get it from. They don't want to become overly dependent on any single source supplier. The vast majority of their energy imports, whether oil, gas, or coal, come in from the ocean, sea lanes of communication. They have one pipeline going across Myanmar, and they now have a pipeline connected with Russia for natural gas, and one other pipeline going east into the Stans. But the vast majority of their energy imports come by sea. And obviously that is the reason for their intense focus on access to the global oceans via the South China Sea and the East China Sea. So they are very, I would say, almost overly paranoid about how tenuous their lifeline to their energy imports are and why they're trying to keep those supplies diverse. And that is one reason LNG helps, is because LNG comes in by ship, not by pipeline. So just like oil, which comes in predominantly by ship, it's flexible. An oil import terminal can take an oil tanker from any given country or any given supplier, similarly with a LNG import terminal or a coal import terminal. Ships are flexible where they set sail from and where they dock with their cargo. Pipelines are not flexible. Pipelines are extremely rigid in that once they are built, it's a point A to point B connection and a very long-term relationship with the country you've just built that pipeline with. And I think that's partly why it has taken so long to get that first pipeline for natural gas with Russia, is China has always been leery of deep relationships with Russia, and for good reason. So I think the more the U.S. can focus on being a flexible supplier of fuels to China by sea, the stronger we can build a relationship. And also we need to become more cognizant of why they're so paranoid about their access through the South China Sea, because that is their access to the global commons of trade for the entire world. If they look west, they see the Himalayas. If they look north, they see Mongolia and Russia. The only direction they can look and see the rest of the world is through the South China Sea and into the Pacific and Indian Oceans.
I wanted to ask you about one other aspect of this, and that is China's Belt and Road Initiative, being the initiative that was launched by the current president, Xi Jinping, to go out and to develop these trade routes to help the countries they're operating and develop a major infrastructure plan abroad. I wondered if there is possibilities, in your viewpoint, for the U.S. and China to cooperate, actually, on some of these projects, to be able to work together in these foreign countries to maintain trade lines, to maintain trade routes, and to be able to develop these countries where their all-important resources also exist.
I mean, that is where countries come together, trade. I mean, that's how countries interrelate, is through trade. China's Belt and Road Initiative is just their means of, as they grow in their ability to export goods, grow in their need to import raw materials to manufacture those goods, they're trying to expand and bolster their trade routes by building the infrastructure to do so. I don't see anything nefarious about it. It's not about them building these infrastructure projects just to push products abroad. It's about building them to expand their ability to bring in raw materials from abroad to keep their growing industry going. And I think that's one thing we tend to lose sight of in the U.S. is China needs to keep its economy growing. And for that to happen, it needs to grow its energy imports and it needs to grow its raw commodity imports. So China is over a barrel. We keep trying to paint China as, a 10-foot-tall giant. China is in a very precarious situation, not only politically, but economically as well. to maintain even 5 and 6% growth is very hard when you're the second largest economy in the world, and probably soon to be, because of that growth rate, the world's largest economy. That is huge year-on-year growth and huge year-on-year increases in energy imports and commodity imports. So what we can do, I think, to try to lower the tensions is help them in this challenge. And just about any way we help them makes them more dependent upon us. By us just being dependent upon them for all the goods we buy from them. You know, bilateral trade makes good partners. Unilateral trade makes our very poor partners. And unfortunately, we're still in a situation of very unilateral trade with China, much to our own detriment. And this is why I say I do not believe the United States has a focused energy policy, certainly not from a geopolitical perspective, or I would think we would be doing everything we could from a political level to encourage China to buy more raw materials, fuels in particular, oil and natural gas and coal from the United States.
So as a final two-part question, and to come full circle on this, looking 5 to 10 years down the road, in what ways do you see the U.S.-China energy relationship evolving and changing? And then conversely, what aspects do you foresee staying more or less consistent with the status quo of today?
First of all, in spite of the fact that China, as I said earlier, consumes more coal than the rest of the world combined and is still today building new coal power plants, I do not see the United States ever exporting thermal coal to China. For the reasons I mentioned, there's just too much environmental pushback and resistance to that to enable the United States to continue to be a large coal producer and pushing that coal to the West Coast for export to China. I think it's just too late. We had an opportunity to do that about 7 or 8 years ago, and it was defeated by many environmental interest groups. The things where I do think we have huge potential, though, is in the forms of petroleum and especially with liquid natural gas. The United States is, as I mentioned, the largest gas producer in the world. We have put a great deal of capital investment in the commercial sector into LNG export terminals and are rapidly becoming one of the world's largest LNG exporters. One way China can reduce or limit its growth and consumption of coal is to burn more natural gas. And the easiest way for them to get that natural gas in country is in the form of LNG on LNG tankers. So to me, it makes immeasurable sense for the U.S. to continue to push for trade deals with China, where in exchange for the vast amount of product we buy for them, we sell them liquefied natural gas. And I think in petroleum, I think there's opportunity there as well. But I'm afraid we'll see the same kind of environmental pushback on exporting petroleum to China as we saw in coal. I don't think it'll be successful because the infrastructure is already there to do it. I think the biggest opportunity for that would be via Alaska and the Alaskan pipeline. I don't think many people realize in the lower 48 that the Alaskan pipeline is starting to go dry because the current flow is diminishing as we have not explored into production in new areas in Alaska. I understand the environmental concerns with increased oil production in Alaska, but the Alaskan people want it. The oil is there, and producing more oil in Alaska to get that pipeline flowing again than a natural destination for that oil from Alaska would be into China and the Southeast Asian market. Just geologically, geographically, it's a no-brainer. And natural gas as well from the same source. And that's precisely what Canada would like to do as well with their oil and gas, is push it to the West Coast for export in the Asian market. Those things I do see potential in happening, the LNG and perhaps the petroleum. Coal, I think it's just dead on arrival. I think the coal industry in the United States is on its deathbed in many ways.
In summary, it really does seem that the U.S. and China have a match made in heaven around energy. And the only thing that's holding us back is the policies that are in place that are restricting free trade between our two countries, especially around energy. Really appreciate you for joining me, Dr. Beach, and sharing your thoughts today. And I hope that going forward, we can have you back and we can continue this conversation.
Thank you, Robin. Enjoy the conversation.
Remember to look for the Bush China Foundation podcast on our website, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts, where you can follow our conversations. Thank you for listening.